Hello and welcome to the wild wormhole where, much like the card, you never know what you're going to get except a call of discovery, because we're a pure, beautiful podcast over here. I'm D House here with my co-host Jay Bray. What's up, Jay Bray?
Also pure and beautiful. Glad to be here.
Love it. Hey, did you hear this slander that Call of Discovery has banned the Wild Wormhole from being spoken in Twitch?
So here's the deal. I try to fill my day with positive things in life that are going to enrich my day. And just something about the words Call of Discovery just like makes this rain cloud appear above me. Like I'm Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh. That's what it feels like. Man, now they're not even going to say our names. Unbelievable.
Can't believe it.
Those guys.
Well, we are back for another episode. We got some news to hit. Oh boy, do we have a lot. So we're going to dive right in. But first, Jim, tell me about your week in Keyforge.
Yeah, it's been fairly tame, all things considered. I guess really the biggest excitement is I've actually been getting new decks for the first time in a while. So I opened up some of our favorite set, Age of Ascension, and got a very spicy one that I've been playing quite a bit. So it's been a lot of fun. And from there, just playing locally. We just have a pretty good group growing. Probably close to like 10 to 15 folks that are getting excited about the game and asking all the questions of, you know, which house or which set to get, what house is the best. And it's kind of fun to watch them find their favorite little combos and houses and things like that. So it's been really fun.
Yep. Yeah. On the AOA stuff, I think I told you this over text. At one point I just said I'm never buying another AOA deck unless it's like for a sealed tournament, you know, or I'm buying a single deck like on the secondary market or something, because boy, I hate that set so much.
Well, if you just get random ones, occasionally you open up one with Binite Rupture, Interdimensional Graft, Too Much to Protect, Routine Jobs, and, you know, it's just really great.
Jargoggle, all the things.
All of the fun things. So just get luckier. That's really my advice.
I just keep telling myself that the World Championships in 2023 will be another team event, and someone's going to have to play an AOA deck, and you're going to be the AOA guy.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. Can't wait to run into all the Heart of the Forest and try myself to sleep.
Sometimes I just think about the Heart of the Forest as a card, and I just get so mad. Like, why was it ever printed?
I do want to meet the person who designed that card, because I'm sure they had some glorious plans.
Oh, man. Oh, goodness. I know we got some AOA apologists in the in our crowd here, but gosh, I hate it so much.
My week's been tame. What about yours? It's been a lot more exciting.
Okay, mine has been just insane. My wife has like picked up a lot of extra stuff at work, so I've had this like extra time at night, and I might have bit off more than I could chew. I ended up joining like three different online leagues, and I should never join three. Like, it just doesn't, there's just not enough time in the day and the weeks to schedule all these games. So I'm regretting it, but I'm getting all my games in. So, you know, here we are. So I'm playing in the Nordic Keyforge League, playing in that craziness, where you bring six decks. Yeah, both ban one from the other opponent, then you protect one, and then they ban one. Then you got to play with three of the last four decks that are still in your lineup. So that's fun. People are very kind in there. I'm playing in the Fire Sale Frenzy on Archon's Corner with some 90 SAS plus stuff. By the way, these games are getting loaded up on our YouTube channel. If you haven't checked our YouTube, be sure to check that out. And that's been a pleasant surprise, actually. Currently 3-0 in that league with this Sins deck that you hated. You told me not to draft, by the way.
I said it was awful. I said you're a crazy person for even considering it.
But here we are. That's been pleasantly surprising. And then I'm playing in the Time Shapers Newton League. Newton is basically two game adaptive, or in other words, you just you play Archon, and then you play Reversal, and that's it. You can end up tying, or obviously winning 2-0. So lost my first round in that. I mentioned, you know this, like, of all the formats in KeyForge, like, Adaptive is probably my least confident one that I ever play in, and, like, oftentimes just don't play Adaptive in general. And I need to develop that skill set. I really do. I need to force myself to play it more. And this is part of that, even though it's not true Adaptive because you're not bidding chains. But even just figuring out, like, what deck, if Vault Tour gets announced tomorrow and it's in January, like, what, and it's Adaptive, what deck am I taking? I have no idea. No clue. So yeah. And then last but not least, again, just playing casual. You mentioned you and I work in a university setting where we're interacting with college students who don't have a lot of money. So KeyForge makes a lot of sense for many of them. And that's been super fun. Just adding new players to the game literally every week. And just this, like, insane commitment to, like, bringing new players into the game right now before the next set goes so we can build some hype. Like, I'm just, like, hyper committed to, like, growing the local community one by one and introducing people to KeyForge, which you make fun of me for, but I know you also love it.
What part do I make fun of you for? I'm curious on that one.
Okay, maybe you don't make fun of me, but you do laugh at me.
Yeah. As I should, as a good friend, you know, as friends do, poke fun. But no, like, growing the local scene's been awesome, and just to see guys get excited. It's a lot of them, like, whether they played Magic or Yu-Gi-Oh as kids, and they kind of stopped playing, and kind of reaching the college age where they're like, oh, I can enjoy these hobbies again. It truly has been the perfect place to get the ball rolling on that. So it's been really great.
Yeah, 100%. And, like, it's sort of like this slow grow toward. We talked about this right before we hit record, but I'm sort of in this mentality of, like, hey, we're about to introduce KeyForge not as, like, a, hey, there's this game that's been existing for forever, but as a brand new game as it gets relaunched under Ghost Galaxy. And sort of like that same mentality of, like, hey, we got to go tell people about this because this thing is amazing. Granted, it's a little bit like trying to get, you know, a retailer to date an ex-boyfriend, ex-girlfriend again. That, you know, they had a tough breakup at one point, but I don't know. I just think we have a responsibility as a community to keep, you know, telling people about KeyForge. So here we are.
Yeah, I mean, just tell them about all the fun memories they had. Don't worry about the negative ones, and it'll be great.
Yep.
good wisdom there.
So really loving that. Playing a lot of just doing a lot of teaching, the 5 steps of a KeyForge turn and all that, but. But I love it. I really do. The last thing I'm doing in my week in KeyForge is I had an interaction on Twitter with actually Blake from Help from Future Self and then Dan from Sanctimonious. Man, I miss that podcast. They did good stuff. But the Discord is still very active, and I love that Discord. In fact, I'm going to give a quick shout out. There's a forum in that Discord channel called Live Blogging Deck Opening. And it might be my new favorite thing of KeyForge. The whole concept behind it is you get a new deck. You go in there and you just kind of tag, like, everyone in there. It's like live deck opening spectators. I can't remember the exact one. But anyways, you go in there and you just reveal one card at a time from the deck and get live reactions to, like, this deck that's being slowly revealed. And it's just been, like, super special because it like... Instead of just looking at the deck list and being like, oh, this deck is crap, or oh, wow, this deck is amazing, or oh, there's a Maverick. It's like, even me, like, as I'm opening it, like, I'm intentionally just looking at one card at a time to try to see, like, what kind of synergy, what kind of combos. And it has, like, I don't know, brought this, like, kind of special little something to, like, the KeyForge deck opening experience where I'm like, oh, I got a new deck. I can't wait to, like, go into that, you know, Discord channel and open this. So... you guys should definitely check it out. If you haven't looked at it, it's super fun. And then everybody at the end tries to guess, like, the SAS score based on everything. And then you see, like, how good are you at evaluating a deck based on, like, what you see. So there's also something for the spectator of, like, speaking of Adaptive or, like, things like that. Or Triad, even. How good are you, or are you at looking at a deck and being like, this deck is good or this deck is bad or whatever.
Sure. Yeah, it's kind of, you can tell the individual card value, I think, is pretty easy to grasp the understanding for, but to really see the whole matrix for how it all works together is definitely a skill that I think the folks that do great in sealed and adaptive style play have naturally. So it's a cool skill to build.
Yep. And then, so last but not least, so sorry, I alluded to this conversation on Twitter. I have my second highest rated Mass Mutation deck is only 77. I honestly, I want to buy more Mass Mutation. I just can't find it locally, which makes me sad. But it's a deck called Lost Cauldron, the First Mate of Fish. Great name. But it's a 77, but every time I like look at it or play it, I just don't like it. And I never want to play it. And so we end up in this conversation on Discord, and then Dan from Sanctimonious, I threw out the question like, how many times do you try a deck before you give up and say, this isn't for me, I'm gonna give it away, sell it, whatever. And Dan threw out, he's like, 10 times, 10 games. To which I replied, holy cow, I have very the percentage of decks I've played 10 times in my collection is actually fairly low. My best decks, absolutely, yes, way more than 10. But like overall, no, I'm like, if I hit 5 with a deck, I'm applauding myself and say, great job, you did it. So anyways, I thought, you know what, it'll be fun to turn this into a YouTube series. I'm gonna play this deck 10 times. I'm gonna record it. I'm gonna post my thoughts. I'm gonna try to figure out what this deck is trying to do, how it wins, and then at the end of 10 games, give my final, hey, I like it, I'm keeping it, or I'm selling it, or I'm giving it away, or whatever. So it should be fun. I'm 2 games in, so those games are hitting in the next couple days on YouTube.
Yeah, that's exciting. I mean, I'm looking at the deck right now. I was like, oh, that actually seems like it should be fun, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. You can see, I definitely give a lot of honest reactions in the YouTube first two
That's cool.
videos that I played against our buddy Josiah. So it'll be fun.
Super
But
fun.
okay, enough about us. We got some news to hit, okay?
So much news.
So much news. First we're gonna hit Ghost Galaxy announced officially the one tier, the middle tier of 5 tiers. For their Game Found campaign, where you can pledge a certain amount of money and then you're gonna get these rewards. So we're gonna comment briefly on this because we got more important things to cover, honestly. But for $150, first of all, we'll just alternate. Are you looking at the article right now?
I am.
Okay, so for the first thing you get is 12 Winds of Exchange decks. You might be thinking that's 120 bucks. Actually, the MSRP of Keyforge decks is going to go up. If you think about inflation around the world, it does make sense. Prices for everything are going up right now. So I do, th I think they announced somewhere on their FAQ that the MSRP of a Keyforge deck is, I think, going to increase to $12.99, if I'm not mistaken. So it'll be $13 instead of 10, which is a little unfortunate, but it's just the reality we're living in. So if you look at that, 13 times 12, you know how much I love math, Jim.
It's 156.
156. So so right there, 12 decks. There you go. So what's up?
Wait,
What else
there's
do you get?
more.
Yeah, what else do we get?
Sure. Well, so you also, if you follow this this on a Game Found, you do get an additional deck attached with that as well, which is nice. I think for the first 10,000 followers,
Yep.
if you support it. But other than the 13 decks MSRP at 168 for you other fellow math lovers, you also do get 2 Winds of Exchange playmats. And it's cool. It does say that you actually get to select which 2 you want. So they have, looks like 1 for each house to pick from. That Star Alliance one looks ultra cute. So if I actually do get to pick, that one looks like an easy one. But even just cool that it's like if you want to support this game and invite a friend into that, that you just have an additional playmat for the game on that. I think that's super great.
The Brobnar guy gives me like Predator vibes.
I get that a lot, yeah. You see that for sure.
Like in a forest, just like that, the way his face is like, oh, that's crazy. And the Infathomable guy looks straight up just so cool. I need that.
Yeah. It's super awesome with the chain coming out.
Yep.
Looks like some disruption happening. We'll see what goes on.
Mm.
But no, that's pretty sweet. And what they normally try to sell their mats for around $20, I feel like.
Yeah.
Maybe 25. I'm not positive on the normal value level there, but great thing to have. I know some people who've been playing card games forever probably have 1,000 play mats, but even just to kind of represent the new set is really cool.
Speaking of play mats, real quick, speaking of teaching new players, when Asmodee had their like Keyforge accessory sale, not their Keyforge deck sale, but their accessory sale, I bought like 20 play mats, maybe more, for like $1 each. Or something stupid. I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was $2. And I've been giving those away to new players with a Keyforge deck box and Keyforge sleeves in addition to their deck. And it only cost me like $3 or $4 to do that. And that's been really fun. And just a quick note, if you go on Asmodee's website, you can still get Keyforge sleeves for like 60 cents for 40. You can get a deck box for 40 cents. Which is just insane. So like for $1, you know, not counting shipping right now, you get a deck box and 40 sleeves for a new player if you're teaching Keyforge. So
yeah, I mean, for those of us who have been around for forever, I mean, think of all the decks that you're like, yeah, I could just give these away.
Yep.
Like you can now give it with sleeves and a deck box. Like it just, the presentation just looks so well put together for it.
And the deck box is like the plastic one, but if you want to go a little bit higher for $1.50, you get the like felt like cloth covered like Keyforge with the holes for the house and the name. $1.50 on Asmodee's website right now for those like deck books, which is it looks so good and it's like so cheap. So anyways, moving on in the campaign,
we're getting what you're excited about.
That's not all. The most important piece of all of this, old Jimbo, is that you get +1 Winds of Exchange personalized deck, a tournament legal Keyforge Winds of Exchange deck incorporating a name of your choice. People, D-House, Dominator of Call of Discovery is incoming. Winning Worlds 2024.
Okay, maybe not that specific, but...
Okay, fine. But D-House, something is coming, okay? Yeah, so you don't get to choose the whole name because the algorithm does kick in, which is also hilarious because it could be like D-House Town Idiot, as the deck name, which would be, honestly, I almost hope it's like a worse, like a really like insulting name instead of like a, you know, woohoo name, because I think that'd be hilarious to play online.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, just to, like... Obviously, we would all hope that we get the best deck of all time there because it's our deck. But just to like have that personal connection to it, I mean, we talk about decks like they're like our children sometime. So just to physically have one that's like, this is our name, personalized to us, like gift wrapped for us, it's just so cool. Like this one, I for sure will play 20 plus times, even if it's terrible, just because it's mine, you know?
Yeah. What are you going to name your deck? What is it? Is it your first name? Is it your full name? Is it your TCO name?
Yeah, that's probably the toughest decision I'm going to have to make all year, is what to name this. So, I mean, Jaybreak could work. We could go with a classic Jim. Jay Trash would be funny just to pick on our boy Jay over there. But I wouldn't waste my deck for that purpose, as great as that could be.
Yeah, you can make multiple accounts and get multiple, you know, personalized decks, just different emails.
Honestly,
you know?
True. You make a good point.
Yep.
So, yeah, that part's sweet. And then just kind of the last piece of all of this, the grand, but wait, there's more, is you actually do get an additional playmat with the card back of your personalized deck. So it'll have your name on it and then kind of show the... I'm curious if they do have the personalized card back and houses and all of that, or if it's, I mean, from what I'm seeing on
that's what it looks like
website, it would be Like, I'm the only one who has this playmat completely.
Yeah.
That seems wild to me.
Like, yeah, 100%. Like, I mean, how many of those are they going to have to print, like, one by one? But they, you know, they own a printer, so not just a printer, like a printing company, basically, Artiforge. That was an interesting surprise, because, you know, it's like I have a Wild Wormhole mat, but if I have a mat that has this, like, unique Archon art and something that says D-House, you know, comma, Town Idiot, or Dominator of Call of Discovery, yeah, or D-House, comma, Zach Armstrong's boss, I mean, you know, I'm all about it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, that's just such a cool thing to kind of bring out to show. I mean, that if I don't get a good deck, at least I'll have this piece to get to show off. Like, hey, I still want to showcase it, which is sweet.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, what a cool idea, and just such a cool opportunity just to get re-excited about the game and fully invest in this new set. I mean, there's just so much excitement around what this could be, and I think they're knocking it out of the park as far as just building up that hype for what it can be.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt at all. So speaking of hype, we're going to move into our next little segment, because as if, I mean, we could spend so much time on that, but we still have four more tiers to reveal for the campaign. So I know, I got to think we're going to see a lot of those tiers announced, you know, probably in the next couple weeks. But there's another article that dropped literally last night. I was getting into bed. I actually had a very frustrating content creator night of I was trying to do video on some games and it wasn't working, and like I literally tried to, I recorded this thing like 3 or 4 times and it didn't work, and I was so angry. Got into bed. I was finally giving up, and I see, oh, keyforging.com dropped a new article, and I was like, thank you, Christian Peterson. I feel so seen. But yeah, new article on All About Tokens, Jim.
The new spice of Keyforged, the token creatures, and this article just gives a ton of clarity on it. So yeah, I'm excited to kind of dig through it with you and with all the listeners, and just kind of see like what are these token creatures, like how are they operating?
Yep. So first thing, we're just gonna kind of go through the article and hit a couple things that I think are important. One is that there's 28 possible token creatures. That's 7 per house for like regular randomly assigned tokens. But then there's 1 per house that is connected to a special rarity card, a rare card in the house, that if that card appears in your deck like Blorb Hive, then it will automatically tell the algorithm, which I love that this article actually went into some details about how the algorithm works, which I think is fascinating for most players. To say, hey, it's got to be Blorb. You're not going to get a Blorb Hive with no Blorbs.
Yeah. I think you mentioned earlier 7 per house. It's 3 typical per house.
Right.
And then you can get an additional 4th. Again, for you math nerds out there keeping tabs on it. Even just right off the bat, it even shows with the card backs what your token creature is on the back of each of those card. So you'll still have your like normal deck list card that's not going to have the picture on it, but like with Dark Tidings, where you got a tide card each time, you'll get a physical token card that all of your tokens will become, and then when you're playing the game and create those tokens, they're all just that card, so you just kind of leave it up throughout the game, just showcasing like this is what they all are.
I have seen a little bit of controversy, or not controversy. I mean, if this is controversy, then Ghost Galaxy is doing a great job of like people arguing about like whether they like the token art on the back of the cards or if they don't like it. Personally, I'm in the camp of I love it. I think when you're introducing new players, I think that it makes a lot of sense to look at like, okay, when you make a token, you take the top card of your deck. It's face down and it goes in your battle line, just to see that picture of like in the article, it's the grunt, the one of the Martian token cards. To see that there, it makes a little bit more sense than just some random back of the card. Of course, we know in competitive tournaments, decks will be sleeved and all that will be hidden. Of course we know all that. But for something like this, they're not concerned about like us competitive players. They're like, we're trying to get new people and casual players to love, you know, this new set. And I think it's a great move to do that. Does it distract from the unique Archon art? Yes, of course it does. But I don't think it's a negative thing at all.
Sure. Yeah. I even like it's such a small detail, but in the article, the Archon art actually kind of bleeds over the name a little, which I just think is so cool. If, I don't know if you can see that. It kind of looks like a beetle. It almost looks like its pincers are like coming over the top of like where your deck name is. And it's like,
oh yeah, that's cool.
I just think it's kind of neat. Like it just kind of gives it a little bit more depth to it. So sorry, super minor detail. Yep. It just kind of like gives it a little bit more life than just your classic 2D little dude on the back of all your cards.
Yep. Yep.
Sure. So yeah, let's dig into kind of what the article talks about, how it selects which token you get and kind of what that looks like.
Yeah. So, there were a couple spoilers in here. We won't get into that too much, but a couple things, as I mentioned, when you play or when you make a token creature, one of the things that they clarified is that making a token creature is not considered playing a creature for the purposes of card effects. And that was extremely interesting because it's more of like a put into play effect than a play, which gets around stuff like Quixel Stone, and other triggers of like, when you play, a card. So I do think that's good to know, like some of the more like intricate rules of this that us like dedicated players were really curious about. It also says when, the card leaves play, I'm trying to get the exact wording. When a token creature leaves play for any reason, it is moved to the appropriate out of play zone as if it were a creature. Usually mm-hmm. This is the owner's discard pile. Once the token creature is in the out of play zone, it reverts to its printed card type and ceases to be a token creature. So you play a Shadows, lights out, you bounce two token creatures back to my hand, they turn back into their original card. Yes. Which, by the way, they note that at any point when you play a token creature, you can look and under that card and see like what is the card that is under there, which I do think is significant.
Yeah, definitely. And it says like you don't have to, as you're looking at the card, it's kind of like your archive card. You don't have to show your opponent. You're actually not supposed to show your opponent what the card is that's hiding. And even just kind of backtrack a little bit, I would assume most folks probably know how the token mechanics work, but when you make a token creature, you're taking the top card of your draw pile and that is becoming the token creature. So it stays face down, you just move that card from the top draw pile to the battle line, still on a flank unless there's a token creature that has deploy. But the moment you move it to the battle line, that's when you can look to see what that card is. Even though it's showing to your opponent as a token creature, you get to know what card is now no longer.
Yep. Yeah, that's huge. I love this concept. Just as a general, like, aside commentary, part of the reason I think I struggled with AOA and I actually still like Dark Tidings, even though I know a lot of people don't, is because a lot of the mechanics introduced in those sets were, like, negative. Like, Heart mm-hmm. of the Forest and AOA, it's like, you can't forge. Amber Imp, you forge, you're stunned, or you die. You know, it's just a lot of, like, negative effects versus, like, Mass Mutation. It's like, oh, you get all these cards that add amber and damage and draw cards. And it's like a positive, like, ooh, this is fun, this is great. I feel powerful, and like everything about this whole token idea is like, ooh, it's adding this cool thing. Like, I don't have to do tokens, but if I do, it's like this cool thing that it makes my unique deck even, you know, more unique, because there could be a deck that has 35 of the 36 cards, but mine has a different token, which makes the deck completely different. Kind of like an evil twin situation. So, like I said, like even with the tide, it's like, oh, I had to get chains to raise the tide and now I'm drawing less cards. It's like a negative thing versus like a positive kind of response. So Yeah, I already liked the idea of tokens, and the more they talk about it, the more I'm like, this is gonna be so fun.
Sure. Yeah, I think even just like the core mechanics being introduced for AOA and Dark Tidings is where the next, like, you had the Alpha and Omega now in a AOA that limited how you can play or structure a turn. Like, you play Swindle and it's like, cool, I stole three, but now my turn's over. That was it. It's just not fun. And the Dark Tide, like the tide mechanic, that ebb and flow idea was cool, but it does seem to kind of clog you up a little bit. This seems more like just more decision points of just things that you can do, which is always just kind of enjoyable to get to see like how to maximize your deck.
Yep. Yep. So yeah, so there are some spoilers in here. We're not going to get too much into those. We are going to talk some spoilers here in a minute. But anything else from this article that you wanted to highlight?
I think just kind of that last little section, just about how the token creatures are chosen. So obviously, you know, with the three houses in your deck, it does show that, you know, the token creature, of course, is going to come from one of those three. But it does say if the deck contains no token overrides, so just things that would... The rare card, essentially, that would be the fourth option, I guess. Then the algorithm chooses a token creature, houses. And it does say the selection is weighted towards the house in the deck that has the most effects related to token creatures.
Yeah, that's interesting right there.
I think that's so important for, you know, if the token mechanic is supposed to work well, then... It, you know, if you have a Brobnar hat set that's making all of these tokens, but the Mars token, it's like, okay, well, I'm making these tokens. Turn. It's just kind of interesting that it almost, because the tokens are of that house, you're much more likely to be calling that house throughout the game. So it makes sense that kind of engine, if you have an engine of making these tokens, that's probably the same house.
Yeah. But I honestly read that and I don't know that I like it. I haven't seen enough of the set. But okay, real quick. There's a Saurian spoiler out there that was in one of the articles that was released. It's Phalanx Leader. If you're like super anti-spoiler, just pause the podcast for now, I guess. Phalanx Leader, Saurian 4 power. Says play, make a token creature immediately to Phalanx Leader's right. In my mind, I'm like, ooh, this is interesting because as a, like, if I'm first player, I'm going right into, I call Saurian, I play this guy, I get this guy down, and I want a token creature from another house because then it gives me options for my next round to go into that other house and, you know, use that creature to my, you know, to good effect. Instead of like going just, oh, give me another Saurian guy. It's like, well, then I, you know, I'm almost telegraphing like, oh, I'm going right back into Saurian. So I thought that was interesting. I'm curious to know, like, maybe it's like trying to create a more positive experience. I don't know. We'll see how it all plays out, but it was an interesting note that I was reading.
Sure. I mean, two quick thoughts with that card in particular. It's kind of funny you use that. Well, just cause it says fight, reap, give the creatures to your right plus two power. So in that case, you'd almost want it to be of that house because you're buffing it so True. That it can do cool things. But just a quick spoiler from the article. I hope that's okay. Just Brawlin that's staring at me right here. It's an action that's making token creatures. So it's like if you're spending the card from your hand, typically when you're playing... Keyforge, you know, if you're playing cards out of your hand to call a house, you're probably going to want to pivot, like you just said. So yeah, I definitely think there's going to be times where you absolutely would want it from a different house. So at least it doesn't say it's always going to be whichever one you have the creation kind of weighted that a little bit, but did find it interesting. So
Yeah, I loved the explanation of how token creatures are chosen. I think that's the stuff that gets people into Keyforge, I think. Like, they see that, they read that. And It's just interesting. Every time I talk about, oh, there's a computer algorithm that randomly assigns 36 cards, and you're the only person in the whole world who, you know, has those 36 cards. It's immediate, like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. Like, so I think that stuff is very interesting to a lot of people, and I love that they're kind of doing a peek, you know, look behind the curtain, like, how does this actually work? And it's like, there you go, that's how it works.
Yeah, for sure. I love the clarity on that, and I think with the tokens, and just like, this is now getting pretty convoluted, that clarity kind of helps me, like, okay, I trust you guys to do that all right.
Yep.
Sweet. Well, anything else from this article that you're wanting to hit up? Definitely was an exciting, let's get, you know, more into this new set and the new mechanics.
I think that's all I got if we want to move on to our next little segment.
Coming up next, yeah, absolutely.
Coming up next after these commercials.
After these commercial breaks of why we don't talk about Call of Discovery.
Is Call of Discovery poisoning your water? Find out next on this episode of Wild Wormhole.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I would say we yeah, just kind of did want to kind of just talk about the new set, and there are a decent number of cards that have been revealed at this point. So again, the spoiler warning of we're just going to kind of talk through some cards and just kind of get excited about what's coming up. I think this article definitely sparked our imagination for how to utilize these tokens, or I think the first thing I mentioned was like where Age of Ascension is such like a combo centric set, pulling cards off the top of your deck that, you know, might ruin combos just seems like you're just going for value, which is science seemed cool. So speaking of value, we're just going to go through the Equidon cards and just look through just this new house and kind of theorize, you know, what's the identity, what are they trying to do, and just kind of like what box are they kind of checking for the Keyforge set.
Yeah. Yeah, so some of these might be familiar, but we figured instead of trying to go through all the spoilers, obviously we don't release a ton of podcasts all the time, although, you know, I'd love to do that every time a new card hits. But I think there's 12 or 13 cards we're going to hit, not, you know, too long, but we are going to hit, you know, and chat through. So you want to just alternate cards?
Yeah, sure. Sounds good. And yeah, if you have something majorly you want to hit on, sure, let's knock it out.
Sweet. All right, so first card is card 58. It's the Merchant. This is a token Equidon creature, has one power, no armor, has an action, steal one, destroy Merchant.
Sweet.
There you go. So yeah, so basically you get that token in. This is why I like that Phalanx Leader saying, oh, I'm going to drop this Merchant in, then I'm going to go back into the Merchant house, and I'm going to actually drop, you know, use this other guy, this other house, and he's already out there, so I can do the steal one to destroy him before he dies, because he's only one power, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense, and I think he's cool. I mean, just the option to steal one, it's just staring your opponent in the face. So if they have a clear board, they're like, well, I don't want to lose that Amber. There's only so much that you can kind of like try to hide. As they're staring down, I think about like the Sanctum cards. It's like, well, that's going to reap and capture one. So I now need to mentally push my like keys to seven Amber, not six. And so I just think that's a cool one for just the first token that we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's a very real thing.
Oh, for sure. Immediately where my head goes with this is like, I really have no idea how Dex of Keyforge is going to figure out SAS for this set.
Agreed.
Like,
yeah, you have to take the tokens into account and then somehow figure out, well, it's creating this mini, so that's the effect that it's, yeah, it's good luck to those friends.
Because, like, okay, if the card right next to it that it was spoiled in the article is Brawlin. It's a Brobnar action that says play, make two token creatures. And you're thinking, oh, great, two merchants. But Brawlin also says make two token creatures and enrage them. So if Brawlin is getting in two merchants that are enraged, I mean, you've got two little one-power creatures that have to clear an enrage in order to, you know, get to that action steal one. And if you're not dropping any elusive guys out, this guy's just bad.
Yeah, great point. And I can go and jump onto the second one.
Please do.
Funny enough, this one would work great with Brawl In. So it's Scout. It's another, it's card number 59. It's another token creature in Equidon. It's one power and just says destroy, draw a card. So, you know, we don't have shadows or logos in this set. One's stealing an amber and one's drawing a card. So, you know, that one is not that big of a deal to go ahead and enrage because you're trying to get that efficiency. And I really like that effect. I think the destroy draw mechanic is cool because it's just this lingering effect that, like, I probably won't kill it too often on my turn. But to have that consistent reap ability is great. But then, you know, forcing my opponent to kill it on their turn to draw a card is usually better.
Yep. I think Scout is very good. Of the tokens I've seen, Scout's probably the most exciting. I'm totally just, you know, hypothesizing here, but in the mats that they showed on the Game Found page, the Sanctum mat is like this kind of priestly, like, healer looking guy that's like, you wonder, like, oh, are they going more into like the Sanctum, not just armor but healing kind of vibe, which makes me think, is Cleansing Wave coming back as a reprint? So, you know, you could use a Scout to fight into a guy, do a damage, draw a card on a future turn, use Cleansing Wave to get a bunch of value. I don't know. This is just where my brain goes. But I think anytime you see destroy, draw a card, efficiency is always good in Keyforge. That's why I keep telling all the new players we're teaching is like, hey, like, legitimately, efficiency is so good. And so it's just it's just a really powerful way to draw cards, to maybe get some value off of a Cleansing Wave. I don't know, we'll see. I know I lost you there for a second, Jim. Can you hear me now?
I got you back. No idea what the last about minute was, but that's okay.
Sweet. Good thing I'm recording on my end, so the listeners won't know anything. We just went into a quick wormhole, and here we are.
Perfect. Yeah, nobody, just don't mention that I couldn't hear you, and it'll be fine. Never show up.
That's so great. All right, next up, we've got Ambitrage, which is a rare artifact. It says your keys cost plus one amber, and during your draw card step, refill your hand to one additional card. Jim, this card's so good.
It's cool. Oh, man. TMTP value against it is great. no, I love that. The permanent mother-daughter effect. Yeah, it's just cool. I mean, I think you can quickly see with this set that there's always this kind of give and take idea of you can do something that's cool, but you have to give up something else. And this is the perfect example of, you know, keys now cost seven, but you're playing with seven cards, which is awesome.
Yep. Yeah, a little daughter or mother that sticks on the board a little bit easier. I feel like it's so good. I think Archon's Corner asked a good question in a podcast. At what point because Ambitrage, like, what if you get multiples? How many do you want before it's like...
exactly what my head was just going.
Yeah.
Because the other thing that's nice is if you have three or four, now that's thinning out your Equidon house, so you're not going to call it as much. So it's just going to be that many more of your Brawl-In cards over there in Brobnar. No, that's sweet. I mean, I'm never going to be mad to see that card, I don't think. It slows down the game a little bit, but I think it allows you to kind of do that catch-up pretty quickly. So I think that's sweet.
Yep. I really like this card. I hope I see it in all my Equidon decks. Give me that card.
All right, next one up. It is another rare action card called Art Project. So we're having to do a little bit of guesswork for what this is, but Archon Arcana did a wonderful job of doing their best guesswork. So it says, play Unforge an opponent's key. If you do, purge the art project and your opponent archives the top six cards of their deck. Wow. Finally, unforging a key and not just giving them all of their amber. You're giving them efficiency instead. Definitely wise if it does say... It doesn't show to purge it on the card art from what we see, but I think that's probably a good guess that this is one that you won't get to kind of run back through if you play it, because that just seems crazy to be able to keep unforging keys on your opponent. But
yeah,
I don't know. That's pretty spicy.
That is... If you're on the opposite side of this and you get art projected and you get six cards in your archives, how do you feel?
I'm upset. I mean, because, yeah, you do get the comeback mechanics for the next couple of turns, but if this set has decent amber control, which, again, they don't have shadows, so maybe it will be more difficult to kind of come back from that, but, I mean... Hey, there's Sanctum. Doorstep to Heaven could be back in the set. You never know. So there's just a lot of cool opportunity there just to totally roll back your opponent.
Hmm. Yeah, that's very powerful. Very, very powerful. It looks like a rare?
I believe so, yeah. So. That feels like the quirky enough kind of mechanic that would probably make sense as a rare anyway.
But yeah, late in the game, if you drop this art project, oh my gosh. I mean, that is so
good. Yeah, I mean, typically each key gets more and more difficult to forge, so playing at four instead of three is just like, ugh. Mm-hmm. All right, I want a Legacy Maverick Dissania. There we go.
Yeah. I was literally thinking, like, I wonder how much archive hate is in this set, you know?
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
All right, moving on. This next card comes with a little bit of controversy / news as of like an hour or two ago, but I'll read the card and then I'm going to read the update. It's called Corner of the Market. It is an Equidon rare. Action says play during your opponent's next turn. They cannot play cards. Cannot. Wow. And each time they discard a card from their hand, they make a token creature. Immediately you look at this and you're like, holy cow, that's very strong, right?
Absolutely.
So immediately we saw this, cause it was released at Gen Con, and, Tyler on, he's an FFG employee. He was one of the developers on the set, made a Twitter, he responded to another tweet saying, I think Karen Brown tweeted it, but basically, like, what about other sets? And Tyler said, well, there's a generic token that can show up for other sets. And so people started wondering, okay, what does that mean? Like, what does it look like? How do you implement that? But as of today, literally today, Wednesday, August 31st at 12:17 p.m., someone sent in a rules question and about this, and they said, thank you for contacting us about Winds of Exchange. This is not Christian Peterson. This is a guy named Michael Hurley at Ghost Galaxy. We don't know exactly what Michael's role is, but here we go. The concept of any Keyforge deck being able to make a generic one-power token creature that could be used as if it belonged to the active house was part of an earlier design for Winds of Exchange. FFG did playtest this concept, but when Ghost Galaxy assumed control of Keyforge, the Winds of Exchange card pool and its accompanying rule set were not in final form. Ghost Galaxy is finishing the design and development process on Winds of Exchange started by FFG, and that finishing work involves making changes to the set that we feel are necessary to make the product excellent. Some cards, such as Corner of the Market, are being reworked. Boom.
I was initially sad, but then I was like, yeah, Corner of the Market seems crazy, especially if there isn't a generic token for not Winds of Exchange set or decks. I think the first thing is control the week without the amber, but like so much cooler. And we were even talking about like Brain Drain of a card from Dark Tidings, which allows you to look at your opponent's hand and just put one of their cards on top of their deck. And how powerful that effect is just with one card. Being able to know exactly what's coming at you. Where Corner of the Market has the potential at the end of a game just to say, like, hey, if you don't have Amber Control on the board, I just win. There's nothing you can do about it. Which is crazy powerful, especially at the end of the game.
Yep. I saw some people talking in Discord. I think Sky Jedi was one of them, but they said an easy rework of this could be each time they discard a card from their hand, they make a token creature or archive a card.
Hmm.
So basically, you know, either if you're another Windex deck, you make the token creature or you archive a card or you choose one or whatever. But I was like, that's a, you know, pretty quick fix that might make it feel a little bit more equal, but yeah. End of the game, this feels like stealth mode where you're like, I win.
yeah. But even like stealth mode, there's other plays around it where the Corner of the Market truly is just, you just know for a fact, okay, I just won. So yeah, it feels very just like game ending, GG. Where I know typically those aren't super well received kind of effects.
Yeah.
So sweet. That was fun. Let's move on. Next up, we have an artifact called Cursed Relic. We're back to the enhanced mechanic from good old Mass Mutations.
Love it.
And this one has not one, not two, not three, but six Amber enhancements. And you're thinking, what? Six Amber pips from one card?
Yep.
Craziness. But it gets even wilder. So with the Cursed Relic, it says you cannot play Cursed Relic or choose to discard it from your hand. So, yes, you're getting six additional Amber pips throughout your deck. The enhanced mechanic allows for each one of those pips to show up uniquely on a card within the set. It can double up. I think total you can have up to five pips on a card. I believe that was what was determined there. So your deck is going to be making a lot more Amber, but where we just got very excited for the card that makes your keys cost more and you get one additional card, this is essentially always playing with a five-card hand when you draw it. So if there's ways to, you know, eliminate cards somehow or, like, turn cards in your hand into token creatures, maybe you could get rid of this. But as of what we've seen right now, it looks like once you draw the Cursed Relic, you're playing down a card in your hand, which is very, very spicy.
Yeah. Yeah, I am so curious, because, again, this is, like, sort of a permanent chain. Like, one, how many mechanics can actually get rid of a card in your hand involuntarily? And, yeah, if this card will be playable. I just don't know. I my gut is yes, but I don't know. The token mechanic definitely makes a way of getting this Cursed Relic into play. Maybe there's some stuff where you can kind of shape the top of your deck, like with Star Alliance, and then making sure the Cursed Relic is the next card on top, which you then, you know, like Lay of the Land. Even if Lay of the Land is a reprint and you draw the card but leave Cursed Relic as a second card, and then you have a Star Alliance card that makes a token creature, and that's how you get around it. But I feel like there's so many ways of, like, accidentally drawing this, like, even in your, you know, opening hand or your mulligan into this, that it just feels risky.
Yeah, but I mean, if there's ways to manipulate the top of your deck and then you can make that specific one the token creature, then this card turns awesome. It's such a cool card that I think perfectly reflects what this house is doing with this give and take idea. So just the like the cursed sword of whatever, where it's like it's stronger but it hurts you somehow. I mean, this is the quintessential, like, what a cool idea for six Amber on a card. Yes, please. Wow, what a drawback.
Yep, for sure.
Cool.
All right, moving on to Flea Market. This is a rare artifact action. Look at a random card in your opponent's hand. You may give your opponent one Amber. If you do, play that card as if it were yours. Jim?
That's awesome.
You can look at my Wild Wormhole, and you can play my Wild Wormhole.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
And like, you get an Amber, I get an Amber for playing the Wild Wormhole, and then A, I get it to play the top card of my deck, and B, I win the game because you played Wild Wormhole, and that's the house rule.
Yep, exactly. Game over. Great. Game over.
Such a cool idea.
I love this. I love that it's an artifact. I love that it's random. I love random chaos like Wild Wormhole, you know. I do think this is gonna lead to some hilarious maybe tilting moments in some games for some people. But you know, I'll be looking for flea market decks, I'm gonna tell you right now.
Yeah, I mean, just a fun idea to just even like see what your opponent has. I mean, hand knowledge is good. I mean, it's not incredible. But it's a cool idea. Just know what's coming at you.
Yeah.
If you end up not playing it,
it's like it's like, oh, Shadow's not in the set. That's fine. I'm gonna give you one, yeah. And I'm gonna randomly pull that TMTP out of your hand, and that one I just gave you is now mine again because I just stole it back.
Totally. Yeah, very, very cool. Just like, yeah, it's like, well, maybe it's not helping you a ton, but that would hurt me, and I don't want that.
Yeah. So,
very cool idea. Very cool
I love idea. It so much. Love it.
Sweet. Let's get on to the rare creature. Good old Talent Hunter. Talent Hunter's cool. It's a card that I believe that's a natural Amber Pip on it.
I think so, too.
So Talent Hunter has one Amber Pip on him. He is a 2-power creature. And it says Talent Hunter can be used as if it belonged to the active house. Cool. But here's the caveat. Play. Look at your opponent's hand. I'm sensing another theme for this house. And play a creature from that hand as if it were yours. Your opponent gains control of Talent Hunter. Which is sweet, eh? You get hand knowledge again, which is, you know, typically cool to see what's going at you. It's only a 2-power creature that you're giving to your opponent, and you get the Amber. It's not going to your opponent for that, so they're just getting the 2-power creature. But you also get to play a card from their hand, so it's now you know, one less card that they get to pick from. So it's almost giving them a chain. And if you have a way to kill a 2-power creature immediately, they're not getting any benefit. If you can't kill it, this does get scary because it belongs to any house and can. Can be used as if it belonged to the active house, so they get to use it every turn you don't kill it. But as long as you can kill it, it's great.
So what are your real thoughts about this? Because you hate Scally Caper. What do you think about Talent Hunter?
The difference there though is you're not getting anything. Scally Caper is only cool if you let it do the thing of killing your opponent's creature slowly. And this one is just, it messes with their hand. It allows you to play something, so it's forwarding your agenda. I just feel like the Scally Caper, there's just so many drawbacks for playing it, and you don't get any benefits for playing it and then killing it right away. That one just feels like such a weird, risky card, where this one, you know, looking at your hand, if it's going to give you upside or not.
Yeah. Yep. This will be very interesting because my head started to go like, ooh, what if I get a Witch of the Eye? But then I'm like, wait, there's no Untamed in the set. That's a bad card. You know, like, it's just, I don't know. I like these intriguing kind of, it's a little risky, but I like it a lot. So.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing I will say about it, I mean, just from the cards that we've just even talked about now, none of them are board clear. So, obviously, like, there will be some amount of, like, board clear or board damage from the set house. But it definitely doesn't seem to be a staple of the Equidons.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it would be a lot more challenging probably in Equidon than it would be in, like, a Brobnar or Sanctum. To be able to kill off the Talent Hunter, which probably is a good thing that it might take a little bit more effort.
Yeah.
So.
All right, next card is Out Negotiate. It's an uncommon action. Gives you an Amber Pip when you play it, which
is interesting because the play effect is choose a card in your opponent's discard pile, steal amber equal to the number of amber bonus icons on it, and put that card on the bottom of its owner's deck. So kind of Infernacy, but you get to steal, and it's only one card. So most of the time, you're probably gaining one and stealing one, which is pretty stinking good, honestly. You are putting that card back in the owner's deck. But, you know, your Ritual of Tognath right now is looking real tasty. Yeah, this card seems very good.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I'm thinking like Relentless Whispers as like the first thing that came to mind of gain one, steal one. And that one came with the caveat of having to deal two damage to a creature and kill it. Which typically that's a good thing to be able to do the damage for it. Where, you know, giving them a card back probably isn't typically going to be a good thing for them. But yeah, the Delta 3 even of gaining one amber for playing it and then the two for potentially stealing one is awesome. And obviously there's going to be times where you can find 2 to 3 amber on a card. That's rare, but it can happen, and then it just gets even stronger. So yeah, I love that card. Good. I think it's awesome.
All right, what we got next?
Sweet. Up next, we'll kind of go through a little bit quicker here. We got Scrap Thief. He is a 4-power creature, no armor. And he says, reap, swap an artifact in your discard pile with a card in your hand. Which is cool. There's, you know, a lot of artifact hate that are destroying artifacts just because they're permanent, so you need ways to mess with them. But this, if they destroy one of your artifacts, it allows you to bring it back. So if you have a deck that's reliant on that, it does allow you to kind of get it back a little bit quicker than trying to cycle through your whole deck.
Also, but I did not realize this until this very moment, but if you do happen to draw the Cursed Relic and it's in your hand, you can pull an artifact out of your discard pile, even if it's another house, and switch it with the Cursed Relic.
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, gosh. How did I miss that before? That helps a ton.
Yep, because it's not discarding the card, it's swapping it.
Yeah.
Swapping. Yeah, I would read that as, I mean, unless there's a rule that comes out about it in particular, because the cards are swapping and you're not just discarding the card, which I am curious if that's going to matter for like discard pile order. That's just a whole other ball game that my brain can't function right now to think through. But yes, that does look like a way to potentially get rid of Cursed Relic, which is awesome. So it is a reap effect, cool. So if you know you're going into a Cursed Relic deck, maybe you kill this thing quickly, but pretty cool effect. Not amazing typically, but could be.
It's also not a May, which could be a negative effect.
Totally.
Because then if you have Cursed Relic in your discard pile, you can't reap with this guy.
That's funny. That is very funny.
Okay, next card is Closed Door Negotiation. It's a common action, which that's significant. I think the commons are really significant. You get an amber just for playing it. It says your opponent draws a card. Steal one, period. If you do, and your opponent still has more amber than you, trigger this effect again. So basically, what we have is a new bait and switch, but...
Yes.
Maybe more balanced because you are giving your opponent a free card every time you steal one.
Sure. And it does seem like it's worded similar to the new errata of bait and switch where you can only trigger it one additional time. That's how I would read that.
Yes, but there has been quite a bit of debate online. I don't think we need to get into it about if this continues until you stop it, or if it stops after once. I'm not the rules lawyer here. I'm not going to try to make an argument here or there, but there has been quite a bit a convincing argument to say this is different than bait and switch, in that because you're giving your opponent a card every time, it will continue.
Interesting. I mean, potentially. Yeah, I don't know. I would have to look into how other cards are worded similarly. But yeah, that definitely sounds like a discussion for another day kind of thing.
Yep.
But it is an important thing to take note of and to be on the lookout for a more distinct, I guess, ruling on that.
Yeah. Yep.
So we're playing the game, right?
That's right.
All right. We got two more cards.
Yeah, I think we talked about these before, but we can hit them real quick.
Sure, yeah, real quick. And I will say, I mean, the closed door negotiation is a common. So, I mean, that's a thing that will come up quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Potentially, you know, multiple times. That's sweet with the amount of steal that you can do already. So Genesis Offer, yeah, it's just a common. No Amber, Amber Pip on it. But it does say play, destroy friendly creature if you do steal two Amber. So I want this in every scout deck ever. Scout being the token creature you mentioned earlier with the destroy draw card. You play Generous Offer to destroy your scout. Draw card, steal two. I'm in. I want all of these.
Yeah, as a common, like, I don't care. Just flood my deck with them.
Definitely.
I generously accept.
Which it will depend a little bit just on how easy it truly is to make token creatures, because that's obviously typically where you're going to want to go with that, unless you have cards that just say destroy, do cool stuff. But, I mean, steal two is steal two. I mean, that is a great effect. I mean, I look at, like, Cutthroat Research as, like, how difficult that is to pull off, but when it does, man, is that so good to steal two Amber. So I'm for it.
Yep. It's so good. Love that. Last but not least, we've seen this before. The Old Tinker, 3 power, elusive, reap, discard a card from your hand, draw a card.
So sick.
Great, good efficiency. Yep. Little logos in there.
Yeah, exactly. We've seen that effect before, but it's solid. Yep. We've even seen just reap, discard a card, and even that's good just to cycle your hand a little bit.
Yep.
So to discard and draw just for the potential to draw into Aquadon is pretty cool.
Yep. Yep.
So, yeah, I'm liking this house. Definitely seems to have the Logos and Shadows vibe. I am curious if there will be any creature control. But 13 cards is a pretty good idea for what the set's about and, like, what this house is going to do.
Yep.
So, cool.
All right. We are already over an hour. I'm tempted to skip King Potato this week. But if you object, I will be prepared to do that.
Hey, here's the thing about tradition. We can do a speed round King Potato. We can't do Wild Normal without it. So let's just do speed round.
Okay. I'm going to do that right now. I'm totally prepared. I'm just pulling up
absolutely. The deck that you knew was going to be the King Potato that I'm going to get perfectly correct. yeah.
So yep. If we can just, I'm looking up a deck. I gotta keep you on your toes.
Always.
okay. You're never gonna get it, so it's fine. Okay. This deck is from Worlds Collide. And you need to guess the houses based on the algorithm here, of the very one-handed Clyde.
Clyde?
Very one-handed Clyde. He's not just one-handed, he's very one-handed Clyde.
Right. That's so funny. super funny. All right, so very one-handed Clyde. Well, clearly he lost his hand in battle, so that's going to be a Brob-Gnar creature there. Clyde is naturally going to be a Logos boy. So we're going to really emphasize that. So we're going to go Star Alliance as well. So clearly on our Logos, Star Alliance, locking it in. Give me that 3 out of 3.
I think this is the first time you've gone 0-for-3. It is Saurian Shadows Untamed.
This is why you don't rush King Potato.
Yeah, so I'm thinking the Very is a Saurian trait. They're politicians, so everything is extremes. It's very, you know, important that things happen right now, you know. One-handed screams shadows to me.
Yeah.
You know, you're caught one-handed, you know. You got your hand in the cookie jar, stealing, whatever.
I caught red-handed, not one-handed.
Yeah, which leaves Clyde to Untamed, which I cannot defend. I don't have a reason there, but, you know, here we are.
I get it. I don't know. Well, I was thinking if it lasted in battle, I was thinking Brobner, but that would make sense for Untamed, you know.
Yeah.
Those creatures fighting in the forest.
Maybe they got their hand cut off as punishment for stealing. I don't know. Yeah. You know. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Wow. That's why you put more effort into King Potato, ladies and gentlemen.
You
thought it was luck. No, no, no.
Yeah. Next time, I believe it. It's going to be your moment. it's going to be great.
Okay, guys. That'll do it for this edition of the Wild Wormhole. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening to us. First, before you ever touch that Call of Discovery content, we really appreciate it. Any final thoughts, Jay Bray?
Nothing too crazy. Very excited just to see, what these next like tier levels will be for the game found idea, and just to get excited for what's coming next. So,
yep, it's so good.
Sweet.
All right, guys. Well, check out our YouTube channel for sure. Got a lot of stuff on there. Would love some selfishly shameless plug here. Some likes and subscribes. We actually have over 600 subscribers on there, which is awesome. Just one more is always a good thing. Check us out on there. And we're on Twitter. You got at Wild Wormhole. You also can follow Jay Bray on there. He's not on there much, but if you tag him, maybe he'll see it. And that's it, guys. Thanks for tuning in. May all of your wormholes be truly chaotic and unexpected. See you next time.
Peace.